Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we take you to Brattleboro, Vermont, with our guest, Scott Heller. Scott and Dave met in 1991 while Scott was in Mount Snow in Vermont training for a triathlon, and Dave was directing the mountain bike school there. Scott was living in New York City at the time, and Dave is from Vermont. Scott had an early career in marketing and advertising, was running a mail order catalog business, and was an amateur competitive triathlete. Dave was a pro ski patroller at Mount Snow during by winter months and a pro mountain biker in the off season. Previous to Mount Snow, Dave was a professional chef with much experience in the hospitality field. And there they opened their Frog Meadow farm. Welcome, Scott. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming. And tell us a little bit about your story, how you wound up in Newfane or Brattleboro area of Vermont.
Well, like you said in the intro, Dave and I met when I was up there training for a triathlon. I was living in New York, and Dave was from Vermont. Dave was a Vermonter, so I suppose you can say I married a townie. And we did a five-year long-distance relationship with me in Manhattan coming up on the weekend and Dave coming down 2 days midweek. We drove about 25,000 miles a year each on our cars. And then 5 years in, I said, this is enough. I moved myself and my business to Vermont. And after not really having a place to call our own, we built what we felt was a special sacred place to share with friends and family. And this was the farmstead that became Frog Meadow Farm. And we're now 32 years after that, and here we are living the good life in Vermont. So if we fast forwarded to 2005, my business was failing due to technology changes and the advent of the internet and e-commerce. Dave and I took a trip to Hawaii to just kind of figure out what was next. And we rented a house on the Puna coast off the Big Island in Hawaii. We rented a house from a guy who turned out to be a massage therapist. And Dwight had just split up with his partner of 5 years and found out that Dave was a chef in a previous life. And he said, well, I'm a massage therapist. I don't cook. For every massage you give me, I'll cook you both dinner. So needless to say, we were there for 3 weeks, and I think we got an hour and a half massage each every other day. And between that and days spent cycling there and hanging out on the black sand naked beach and swimming with the dolphins, Dave said, I want to become a massage therapist in the future. So we moved back. We came back to Vermont, and Dave went to massage school, and my business was failing. We were trying to figure out what to do next. And over breakfast one morning, Dave says to me, I know what we're going to do. We're going to turn our lovely home, Frog Meadow Farm, and the 63 acres that we're on, into the kind of place that we like to travel to when we go away. I said, what do you mean, dear? He said, we're going to turn Frog Meadow into an all-male, clothing optional, bed and breakfast, and massage oasis. I said, that's nice, dear. I have to go to work now. And 7 months later to the day, we opened our doors as Frog Meadow. And this is our 17th season that we're going into now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We have what I'll call an atypical business model because we're a country bed and breakfast. We're not a white picket fence Bob Newhart with the doilies on the back of the seats and tea and cookies at 4 p.m. Our intention is to provide a welcoming and restorative place for men to relax and to leave the outside world behind. Dave's intention with his massage is to heal, soothe, and restore balance in the body and mind and spirit. So we're not what many guys think of when they think of a gay resort, which is the quadrangle type motel with the pool in the middle and a scale of sexually mild to wild. It's more on the wild side. We're definitely a place to relax. I'm sure guys do hook up and connect, although it's not the main vibe of the place. We're very much a chill environment, not necessarily a party environment. But then again, on the other hand, Dave and I tend to go to sleep early. So what happens after dark does happen, I suppose.
Yeah. So tell us, Scott, geographically speaking, where is the Brattleboro area located within Vermont?
Okay, so Brattleboro is in Windham County. It's the economic center of Windham County. It's in the southeast part of the state, which means it's about 2.25 hours to Boston, about 3.5 to 4 hours outside of the New York area. We have daily train service to and from Manhattan, and it's very close to metro areas. It's very, very gay, very, very gay friendly. It's kind of the area that I suppose tie-dye never left. It's always been an alternative place, a counterculture kind of place, and we've got hippie grandparents and hippie parents and hippie grandchildren. And the beauty of the place is that it has for many, many years been a kind of mecca for the gay marketplace specifically. We have a place called Rock River, which is a gay beach nearby here. It's about 4 miles from Frog Meadow. It's historically been a gathering place for gay and bi men for 55 years now. It's the land is owned by a nonprofit. The nonprofit board is composed entirely of gay men, and Vermont has no anti-nudity laws. So this is something that's part of the culture of the area. It's very open, very accepting, and very welcoming.
You know what comes to my mind? I don't know if this saying is still around, but I remember the saying crunchy granola. That's what Vermont reminds me of.
Yes. And so it's interesting because in the 70s, when there was the Back to the Land movement and post-collegiate and 20 and 30 somethings were moving up here to start communes and to start a hippie lifestyle. And that's never... It was never looked on negatively by the locals. They welcomed us to the area, and so it's always been a welcoming area for newcomers, for people who are different. And by and large, people want to be up. I've lived in a number of places: East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, Middle East, UK, and there's always been a crowd of people who will always say, "Boy, this area sucks, but when I move to X, life will get better." Mm-hmm. And I've never had any kind of encounter like that when I've lived in Vermont. People want to be here, either because they want to get away from a metro area, or they want to lead a simpler life, or they want to feel that they're not on the fringe, if you will, in a very straight environment. They want to be in an environment where gay, bi, trans, or whatever, you're accepted. And that's very much what it's like here.
Do you think... the Brattleboro area is different in any way from the rest of Vermont as far as being open and LGBTQ friendly?
Well, by and large, Vermont is very open and accepting. Burlington, which is in the northwest corner of the state, it's the economic center of the entire state. Three quarters of the state's 660,000 people live in Chittenden County, which is where Burlington is. And so it's very progressive. It's kind of like Austin or Boulder or Madison, Wisconsin. And as a counterweight to it, because we're diagonally opposite them in the state, we're in the southeast corner. We're our own little kingdom down here. We're a much smaller area in terms of population. Again, the county's about 44,000 total. Brattleboro itself is about 11 or 12,000. But it's a very, very friendly counterculture kind of place. Definitely crunchy and granola-ish. Definitely, although Birkenstocks are more in the norm now, they were wearing their Birkenstocks 30 years ago.
Right. So geographically speaking, Brattleboro is in the southern point of Vermont.
Very southeast. So southwest corner, if you were to draw a straight line south to the west, you'd have Bennington and then Albany beyond that.
Gotcha. Okay. Tell us about what the climate's like in Vermont and Brattleboro.
Okay. So I'm going to answer this in two ways. I'm going to say socially, politically, and then we're going to talk about the weather. So socially and politically, it's a very progressive area. Many people tend to equate rural with conservative, but it is really not that way at all. This is kind of a place where many people have moved to. We've got two guys who moved up from Texas recently who were up here for vacation, and they saw churches with rainbow flags. And coming from Texas, they said, "We've never seen anything like that." And one was an ex-Marine, and they picked up roots from Texas and moved here, and they own a motel in Newfane. So The climate is very open, very socially, politically progressive, very open-minded. In terms of weather, we have an extraordinary spring, summer, and fall climate. I mean, it's 60s, 70s, maybe 80s periodically in the summer. We run our air conditioning maybe a half a dozen or 10 times a year. So it's very pleasant by day. It's not high humidity. And we have a lot of guests who are up here in the summer months from Texas, from Florida, to get away from the heat. And they ask the questions about the air conditioning, about the humidity, and about the bugs and things like that. And we explain that this is a very, very different type of situation. You can put on a lightweight sweatshirt at night. You can run around in your shorts by day. It's very, very pleasant, very, very comfortable. And winter is winter. It's Vermont. We have a winter economy that's driven by winter activities, skiing, snowboarding, ice skating, and things like that. And my husband and I are both winter sports enthusiasts. And we've got a number of guests who've discovered the area who've said, I want to be here. They move up here either full-time or as retired guys part-time. And comes Christmas, New Year's, they check out of town for 2 or 3 months. They have a condo in Florida or they rent something, and then they come back in April. So there's an extraordinary amount of outdoor recreational opportunities here. And that's a big draw because it's not expensive, doesn't cost anything to enjoy those things. There's a lot to see and do in the area. And culturally as well, there's some extraordinary things going on here. And about 30 or 40 years ago, when it was clear that manufacturing was never going to come back to Vermont, the town fathers drew up a long-term business plan and said, rather than try to ask large companies to come here, and then we have to build out the infrastructure to support these companies and provide them with tax breaks and stuff like that, we're going to pursue something entirely different. We're going to pursue micro-businesses in what they called the creative economy. So they sought to attract and retain businesses that were in the visual and performing arts. And you can think of theater companies, glass blowers, pottery artists, and things like that, because you don't need to build out the infrastructure. And if a small company with 4 people becomes a small company with 8 people, they've doubled in size and they've created a sustainable business model for themselves and they've contributed to the economy. Now, the long-term effect of this has been that we've built out an extraordinary infrastructure insofar as theater companies, artistic companies, glassblowing operations, and things like that. And these are not run-of-the-mill type of things. We've got the world-renowned Simon Pierce glassblowing operation up here. We've got a friend, Robert de Grenier, and when they redid the flame on the Statue of Liberty many years ago, he was responsible for that, and his work is all over the world. We've got the New England Center for Circus Arts, which is a world-class performing arts academy, and they place their people all over the world with Cirque du Soleil. They also have a recreational program for kids and adults, a cancer survivors program, a number of other theater and performing arts organizations as well. So fast forward to where we are today, we not only have this very, very rich cultural asset for the community, both to participate in and to enjoy, it's become a magnet for tourists as well, because people say, oh my goodness, look at all of these things that are here. So think of things like New Hope, Pennsylvania, 50 right. years ago, right. or in Manhattan 50 years ago, Labor Day and Memorial Day weekend down in the West Village where the artists were all on the sidewalks.
I love it.
It's become an extraordinary draw, and Brattleboro was never a tourist town per se. It was really a merchant town. In fact, that's what Brattleboro means. It means farm merchant town in Old English. We now have people who've discovered this, and not just in the LGBTQ community, but in the greater area as well, because everybody's looking for the next undiscovered place, and it turns out that Brattleboro was that way. I have a 20-something lesbian niece who I had dinner with recently. She says to me, Uncle Scott, all of my friends are talking about moving to Brattleboro. It just blows my mind, and it also blows the mind of my husband, who grew up here, went to high school here, that Brattleboro has become this hip, chic town in a granola kind of way.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. It sounds great.
As a case in point, the Brattleboro Museum and Art Center has got a Keith Haring exhibit of all of the subway posters that Haring created.
Right.
They're suddenly up here.
They're appearing there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So is living in an LGBTQ plus community important to you? And how does that fit into your living situation there? You said it's very accepting in Brattleboro.
It is very accepting. Brattleboro at one time, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, had 3 gay bars. Well, now we don't have any gay bars anymore. I think that the internet's kind of slayed a lot of that. However, guys can walk hand in hand in Brattleboro. Any bar you go to can be a gay bar, and guys will meet and guys will connect and guys will hook up. It just is a very, very open and accepting kind of situation. I mentioned we've got the churches with the rainbow flags on them. We've worked with the local, 2 of the local hospitals, the one Brattleboro Memorial Hospital and the other Grace Cottage Hospital just up the road from us, which is the state's smallest hospital. We helped them form an LGBTQ equity team. And you would think to yourselves, these are small towns. How open and accepting are they going to be to this? And everybody embraces it. Everybody is, I can't say everybody because there's always going to be somebody who isn't.
Of course.
But by and large, this is an extremely open, accepting, gay-friendly, and supportive environment. And what we found is that when tourists come up, the locals are not jaded by seeing so many tourists. The locals are really interested. What brought you here? It's a genuine interest. That's really nice that you like it here. And people take the time to spend time with people and learn from them. So it's not just, oh boy, here come more tourists from down country or something like
right,
that.
Right, from New York.
Yeah.
So if I was walking down the street holding hands with my husband, would anyone blink an eye? Would they care?
I think they'd smile. They might introduce themselves to you, but I don't think you'd get any kind of bigoted remarks or any kind of catcalls or anything like that. It really is quite remarkable that way. I said before, I've lived in a number of places, and this is the longest I've lived anywhere. And this feels the most like home. It feels the most organic that way.
Okay. So there's not really a gayborhood there. It's pretty much all integrated. Nobody cares. Is that what you would describe it as?
I would definitely describe it as that. I mean, there are a number of gay events that take place in town. There's an LGBTQ film festival. We helped this local circus arts, a school called the New England Center for Circus Arts, set up a LGBTQ plus scholarship fund. It suddenly hit me like a bolt of lightning that 3/4 of the staff, 3/4 of the students are LGBTQ plus there. 3/4 of the kids enrolled in the program are either LGBTQ plus or being raised in same-sex households. So it's something that is really baked into what the town is about, being open, being accepting, and being nurturing, which the anti-DeSantis, if you will, type of situation where everybody wants to embrace diversity. And there's no question about it. And if you were to look at it, Vermont is a fairly lily white state. And Vermont was not a slave state. It was a free state when it was admitted to the Union. It was the 14th state. And what we have found is that people here are really interested in people who are from away. They're really interested in people who are different than themselves. And for many years, Vermont had kind of a net drain, if you will. The youngsters would get out of high school and they'd leave and go seek their fortune elsewhere. And so there was a net loss. And it's interesting, since COVID, more and more people have moved to the state. This is our first year in terms of net gain of population as what I'll call COVID refugees, people who said, I have a second home in Vermont and I can work remotely. I want to be here.
Right.
We have what I'll call climate refugees, a number of people from California and Western states who say, well, you don't have wildfires and you have water and your real estate is a reasonable cost, especially relative to California, and you have farms. We want to be here. And so we have that. And then we actually have real life political refugees, whether they be Ethiopians or Afghanis, because our governor has said, we need more people, we need more talent, come here. And then, of course, political refugees in terms of domestic political refugees We've hosted a number of families who've said, I live in Texas and I've got a trans child, and I'm fearing for that child's life and that child's mental health. We want to be in a state like Vermont, and they're moving here and they're being welcomed.
So how easy or difficult is it to make friends in the LGBT community? Are there certain things that or meetups that they could have or they have that I could meet others of my interest?
Yes, there are a number of meetup groups. There are a number of Facebook groups. And the interesting thing is I attended Bar many, many years ago when I was doing my bachelor's in Madison, Wisconsin. And a gay bar used to be for everybody, in effect, LGBTQ, anybody who was a misfit, and I say that in a kind of loving way. And then over time, things atomized a bit, and there were lesbian bars, there were gay bars, there were trans bars, and it's coming full circle now because we're all in this together, and people really recognize that and want to, in effect, share that culture and share that umbrella and be there for each other and be there and have each other's backs. So yeah, there are gay men's dinner groups, and we're an all-male gay property, and that's by choice because we want to provide a safe space for men and those who identify as men. But by and large, there are many ways to meet people socially, and we've done a number of things where we organize social events around activities for people to enjoy. We host a number of skiing events, a number of cycling events, because we're both cyclists, and these are meetups that are social in nature with a common activity that everybody can do. They're not hookup meetups, and that kind of defangs the opportunity. So nobody's looking for Mr. Right; they're looking to do something they enjoy and meet somebody in the process.
I could see another Facebook group coming. Gay guys on skis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was going to ask you about the local economy. Can you tell us a little bit about the local economy? Provide examples to our audience of housing, renting, owning, electric bills, water, gas, utilities, internet.
Sure. So I did a little bit of, I've lived here for a number of years. I've lived in a number of other places. I can tell you right now that real estate, the real estate economy is, I don't want to say depressed, it's much lower. Average prices are much, much lower than they would be in other places. The average median house of a price of a house is in the $300,000 range, which is well below what they are in other areas. Renting, everything, there's this housing shortage because everybody is moving here and everybody is relocating in one way or another. But apartments tend to go for, apartments or small houses go for about $1,000 to $1,500 a month. Cost of utilities is about average. What I did do a little bit of research on, and cost of living for utilities, groceries, and stuff like that is about 96% of average. So it's slightly lower than normal. Now, the flip side of that in many ways is we've got an extraordinary economy here with local farm markets where you'll see things at a price that you wouldn't believe in terms of being reasonable. We've got local distilleries, local wineries, where the prices are quite reasonable. And the flip side for that is also that the level of social services and level of support that comes out of the state are much higher than you would see in many other places. So if you're looking for support, if you're looking for grants, if you're looking for economic opportunity, either to start a business or to start a cottage business, the state is there to back you up.
What are taxes like? So you're getting all of these services. Are taxes high, real estate taxes?
Real estate, let's start with income taxes. If you were to move here, it's a very simple formula. It's 25% of your federal liability becomes your state liability. Your real estate taxes, depending upon what your income is, there's a huge homestead tax rebate program that even we qualify for. I think 2/3 of the people in the state gets some kind of a rebate against their real estate tax. So that's very, very favorable. If you have an income of $200,000 a year, you're going to be in the upper end of things. If you've got an income of, say, $50,000, $60,000 or less, you're going to be able to participate in some of these rebates. So Vermont has a high number of people who retire here because the quality of life is so extraordinary. And they either retire here full time or retire here as snowbirds, meaning they go away for a few months of the year.
Right.
And conversely, we've got a number of people who are winter, who live elsewhere in the winter and come up in the summer months. And because the ski areas have got in winter 40,000 people, but in the summer months, there's only 3,000 or 4,000 people in them. There's a glut of condos that can be rented on a 3 to 4 month basis at a very, very reasonable price. And we've got a number of guys who've come up here. They've discovered the area through us. They discover Rock River. They discover the cultural opportunities in the Brattleboro area and anywhere. You know, if you drop a pin and go a half an hour in any direction, there are a number of just stunning places to visit, to see, theater companies and art opportunities and stately homes. And then you've got these condos that are sitting empty in the ski areas that people are very, very happy to rent on a 3 to 4 or 5 month basis.
Yeah.
And so that makes that work out very, very well.
Yeah. It sounds like the best of both worlds you can have. Yeah. So I wouldn't think electric bills would be too high either. You said that it's rare that you even use air conditioning in the summer, right?
Rare that we use air conditioning in the summer, so you don't have that added expense.
But you use heat in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, you use heat in the winter because it is cold. We've got heat pumps here. And in terms of level of utilities and stuff like that, Green Mountain Power, from what I understand, is something like 90% renewable power. They're owned by an organization in Canada called Hydro-Québec. And much of their power is derived from hydropower, dams and stuff like that. So it is relatively inexpensive. It's not nuclear power. It's safe and it's sustainable, but the expense associated with it is quite reasonable.
Excellent. Excellent. So I guess one doesn't have to go to Boston for the arts and culture scene. Maybe if they want to see like a off-Broadway or Broadway style show, they might, but do you have that culture in the area, in the
yes.
Brattleboro area?
So if you wanted to participate in theater, Weston Playhouse, the Dorset Theater Playhouse to the northwest, the New England Youth Theater in Brattleboro, we do something here on the first Friday of every month called Gallery Walk. All the shops stay open and display art. There's a lot of sidewalk activity, and so it's a way to see people and people watch, which is something I always like to do, and a way to imbue yourselves in culture. Now, if you're dying for that Broadway fix, you hop on the 1 o'clock train and you're in Manhattan at 5 o'clock. You see a show, you stay overnight. You hop on the noon train back out of New York and you're back in Brattleboro at 5. It's quite reasonable. So for those of you who've got to get your Carnegie Deli corned beef at midnight or your Ray's Famous Pizza and a fix of a Broadway show, you can certainly do it easily and without having to drive.
Excellent. Now I'm getting hungry too. So speaking of hunger, let's talk a little bit about restaurants. So I'm trying to picture the Brattleboro. Does it have a downtown where there are a bunch of restaurants and stuff?
Sure. Brattleboro has a very vibrant town area. It's kind of, we talk about farm to table as the new hot thing, but Brattleboro has been doing the farm to table scene for the last 50 years. There's a ton of restaurants at various different price points, from verbal menu special of the day, haute cuisine type of stuff, to vegan and gluten-free type, simple dining, to taco type food trucks. So there's I don't want to overuse the word ton, but there's an awful lot of restaurants at various different price points. It's a foodie's heaven that way. And there's an absolute plethora of just good options with local ingredients. And this is what's been going on for years. There's a summer farmer's market, and then comes winter months, there's an indoor winter farmer's market as well. And we're not just talking about veggies, we're talking about baked goods, we're talking about cheeses, we're talking about all kinds of fun stuff.
So is there also like an international cuisine restaurants? Can you find any in town?
You can find Thai, Japanese, Chinese, Italian. You can find Mexican, you can find Ethiopian. I believe there's something in the Afghan space that's opening up because of the Afghan refugees that have been come in. We've got Middle Eastern as well. So yeah, a very, very,
incredible.
Very, 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 very wide group. It's very, very interesting. There's an organization that's been here for many, many years called the School for International Training. They were founded as the Experiment in International Living. And what SIT is about is major corporations will send their people to SIT for cultural and language training before they deploy them to their international posts. So if you're going to be moving to Rome to work for IBM, IBM will send you up here for anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks for language and cultural immersion, and then ship you over to there. And conversely, European and nationals from other countries come here for American cultural instruction. And a lot of those people have then found Brattleboro as their home. And so you say to yourself, you have this somewhat lily-white state with a handful of metro areas, Brattleboro being what I'll call the smallest metro area, 44,000 people in the county, 11,000 people in Brattleboro. And there's this whole major cultural influx that's disproportionately large for an area that's so small. And that's part of what makes it feel so rich and so different, because it is very much like a United Nations kind of thing.
That thing pot.
Yeah. No, it's exactly. And everybody celebrates the melting pot and celebrates what's different.
I love that. I want to go there.
We want to have you up.
And okay, so the restaurant scene's great. The arts and culture scene, it sounds great. Tell us about a little bit about transportation. I know it's the United States on a whole is car centric. So I would assume in a rural community such as the Brattleboro area, I would think you would need a car to get around. Is there any traffic, so to speak? And what's the closest airport?
So you would need a car to get around here. I mean, there is local bus transportation. But by and large, you'd want to have a car to get around. A lot of people do stuff if they live in town, town being Brattleboro, you can get around on foot or get around by bike. But by and large, you'd need to have a car. I mentioned the train service in and out of town. And to answer your question about best airport, now the Boston airport is 2.5 hours away. The Burlington airport at the opposite end of the state is 2.5 hours away. The airport that we have guests fly into and out of and that we use for the most part is Hartford, Connecticut, which is about 1 hour and 15 minutes away. It's Bradley Airport. The airport code is BDL. And it's a straight shot on interstate highway, not having to drive through any metro area. So it's not like driving through Metro Boston with traffic or against traffic to get to Logan. It's a very easy shot. And there are shuttle buses, and you can pick up a third-party limo or Uber or something like that.
And it's usually a connection at Hartford?
Well, like actually, Hartford is like it's not a first-tier airport, if you will, like Boston or LaGuardia or Newark. It's a second on par with something like Providence. And as an example, there's 3 flights daily to Boca Raton. There's 3 flights daily to Fort Lauderdale. If you're flying out to San Francisco, you probably would have to connect through Chicago or something like that.
But again, it sounds like they cater to snowbirds too, because
exactly, it's a good in and out airport. It's not a small airport. They've beefed up the size of it in the last 10 years, so it's certainly feeling quite contemporary in terms of what they've got in terms of amenities, and all the majors fly in and out of there.
So I wouldn't think there would be traffic around the Brattleboro area.
Now, it's funny that you say that, because we just recently spent 10 days visiting my niece and her wife in the Napa area and some friends in San Francisco. And of course, we did all that by car. And Dave and I looked at each other every day as we were driving around and thought, thank goodness we don't live in this kind of environment. We don't have traffic. We don't have traffic lights. We don't have to get in the car and wait for something or sit in lines. And then we finally get to someplace to sit in lines and stand in lines and wait for service. The beauty of where we live, and this is going to sound funny, is I'm driving down my hill to get to the main road and the car passes. And of course, it's a neighbor and I wave at them and they wave at me. And it's just a very, very friendly environment. You get down to the main road, and you drive down into Brattleboro on our state highway, Route 30, and there's no traffic. There's no drama about where am I going to find my parking space. And when we have our guests up, they'll say to me, my goodness, they don't even know who I am, and everybody's waving at me. What kind of crazy people are they? I say, well, they're just friendly people. They want you to know that they're friendly, and so they're waving at you. And if you got lost and you rolled your window down, they would stop and say, can I help you? They say, that's very unusual. I say, well, no, that's actually quite normal here. You're just coming from a place where people are less friendly and where people are in a rush, or where people have just seen too many people and they're focused on what they got to do in a day.
Like it's when I lived in New York.
Exactly. Exactly. People won't give you the time of day because they got to get where they got to get.
Yeah. The New York City lifestyle. So that also reminded me, I wanted to ask you, so you don't have Costco's up there. You don't have Targets, or do you have, does that exist, or is it just local?
So it goes like this. In Brattleboro, we have mostly local family-owned operations. So we don't have a Starbucks, but we have a Mocha Joe's, which is world-class coffee roasted to order. We operate through their commercial operation, and they roast and grind to order. They've got a local coffee shop. We don't have a Starbucks.
I like that though.
Yeah, yeah. We don't. We've got our own bagel operation. We do have a BJ's wholesale club just over the border into Massachusetts, which is all of 35 minutes away. If you want a Target, you can go to Keene, New Hampshire, which is just across the river and about a half an hour away. So those things do exist. And in many ways, New Hampshire has kind of set up predatory retail type of operations where you go right across the river and there's a liquor store and there's the cheap cigarettes and there's a Target or there's a Sam's Club or something like that. But by and large, Vermont does not have the population centers to necessarily warrant doing something.
Support. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a situation about 10 years ago where Home Depot moved in across the street from a very wonderful family-owned True Value hardware store. And the town absolutely railed against it. And there were bumper stickers on the cars that said, hometown's not Home Depot. And we're very socially conscious and politically active here. And we literally ran the Home Depot store out of town. It just wasn't profitable for them to be here. And there's one in Keene, and there's in New Hampshire, and there's one in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And if you want to go there, you can go there. But it's something where people in Vermont have kind of drawn a line in the sand and said, this is the kind of environment that we want to have here. And it's not that they're unfriendly. It's just that's what everybody is about. Everybody wants to protect that.
But don't take away my crunchy granola.
Exactly. Don't take away my crunchy granola.
Because I want to put some in Ben and Jerry's.
Exactly. So talking about things like crunchy granola, normally you'd go to a Whole Foods type of store for something like that. And long before there were Whole Foods in the area, we had something in town called the Brattleboro Food Co-op, which is just like a Whole Foods in terms of size, stature, inventory, amount of locally produced type of stuff, except that it operates on what's the co-op model. And the co-op model is that it's member owned. So it's kind of like a co-op in Manhattan, and that everybody buys a share so that the capital is there to run the organization. You can choose to volunteer or not. You can shop there if you're not a member. You just don't get the 5% discount that members get. And it's this robust shopping emporium with prepared foods and seafood and local cheeses and local baked goods and bulk foods, all the things that you'd come to expect at a Whole Foods, as if Whole Foods invented that model. But it's a co-op, and that's very much what Brattleboro is about.
Is it as large as like a Whole Foods? Is it like a supermarket?
It is like a huge supermarket type of thing, yes.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Okay. So that brings us to crime and safety. What type of crime is there in Brattleboro? Is there any to speak of? Is it petty theft? I wouldn't think there's much gun violence.
There's not much gun violence to speak of. There's not much major theft or something like that. Just a second. I did a little bit of research on that, and I'm just looking for it right now. I'm speaking of all of Vermont because I can't segregate it by the county, but Vermont's violent crime rate is 1.7 incidents per 1,000 people, which is 2 points below the national rate. And I would say, like many places, unfortunately, rural or urban, there is a drug issue. an opioid issue, a fentanyl issue. And like many areas, rural areas especially, these situations have been exported from urban areas to rural areas.
Got it. So I'd feel safe walking my dog.
You would definitely feel safe walking your dog. If you lived in Brattleboro, I would say lock the door to your house and lock your car at night. Out where we live at Frog Meadow, I don't know where the house keys to the place are. And we've lived here for 27 years. And when guests check in, they say, are there room keys and is the house locked at night? And I say, no, it isn't. This is all on the honor system. If you want my car, the keys are in it. It's never really been an issue.
Right. That's pretty comforting. It's different. Let's put it that way. It's different than everywhere else.
So I say use your head. If you're parking your car right by Rock River to hike in, lock the car, put the valuables in the trunk, put on your big boy hat and think that way. But right, once you're in what I'll call the true countryside, like where we are, you can kind of take a deep breath and say, I feel like I am safe and secure.
Nice. That's a great feeling to have. So tell us, Scott, tell us about the healthcare in Brattleboro. Are there sufficient number of doctors to the population? What type of hospitals do you have? If you did have something major going on, would you have to go to New York or Boston?
So let me walk you through what we have here. Brattleboro's got Brattleboro Memorial Hospital. I was just there yesterday at the orthopedic department having a checkup on something because I had rotator cuff surgery 3 years ago. I work with a specialist there. I work with a cardiologist there. So it's a full service, decent sized hospital. And they've come up with their own way to embrace the LGBTQ community. They've got a diversity, equity, and inclusion team there, and they're very upfront about it. They've got at every point of contact that I was in yesterday, they've got a sticker that says all are welcome with the LGBTQ and transgender
wow
flag. Makes you feel very comfortable.
Wow, that's incredible.
So on that level, you've got those services right there. One town north of us is the state's smallest independent hospital, an organization called Grace Cottage Hospital. My husband, Dave, has been going there since junior high school. And as a number of our guests have moved to the area, they all ask the question of us, who's the local plumber? Who's the local electrician? Where do I go for a painter? And who's the gay general practitioner? And we took that to heart and met with the folks at Grace Cottage. The gal who's the director of development and community relations 30 years ago was actually an administrative assistant for Dave. And we sat with Andrea and said, what can we do to foster this type of situation at this organization? And what can we do to create an environment where LGBTQ people want to come to and create an opportunity for your employees who are LGBTQ, because you already have a culture of acceptance? And they ran with this request. This happened just before COVID, and shortly after COVID, they invited us up for lunch, socially distanced and outside, of course. And they said, we've decided that we were going to take this to heart. And rather than try and recruit the gay version of Dr. Kylie from Marcus Welby, the hot guy who rides in on his motorcycle,
yeah,
we're going to create an environment where that kind of person would want to come work, because we've already laid the groundwork and fertilized things. So they have recruited people across the organization, everything from doctors to food service people to orderlies, who were LGBTQ plus or who were allies as part of this equity team. They've done a number of initiatives that have all been driven by the curriculum at the Human Rights Campaign, HRC. And HRC has a program kind of like their HRC Top 100 employers for the corporate world. They have something called the Health Equity Index. And Grace Cottage organization followed the guidelines that they set up, put in very, very rigorous programming for staff, employees, and then turned it around to the outward facing side of the hospital to clients and patients. And Grace Cottage Hospital got a 95 out of 100 ranking on their health equality index. And the only other organization to get that kind of ranking at that level in the state was the VA hospital up in White River Junction. So this is an organization that's punching well above their weight in terms of compliance, in terms of embracing the community. And we kind of went at this and they embraced it. If you build it, they will come. I had lunch literally 2 weeks ago with a gal who's got four kids, a husband. One of the kids is trans. They left Puerto Rico where they're from. She's bisexual, married to a husband who's pansexual. Three kids and one trans kid. They said, we can't be here in rural Puerto Rico, which is very driven by the evangelicals. We can't be here. And they landed in Brattleboro. And they go to Grace Cottage Hospital. And they feel totally loved, totally embraced, and totally part of what's going on. Now, she and I have teamed up with each other and with the equity team at Grace Cottage for a series of health clinics that will also be co-sponsored by AIDS Project of Southern Vermont and a third nonprofit organization called Out in the Open, which is a social service organization set up in Windham County for the rural LGBTQ population. So
I just find it incredible. I find it so, I mean, people don't even think about if they move to a place. My thought is, I want to be in a place where I can go to a doctor and the doctor knows that I'm married to my husband and there's no problem with that. That's so important to the gay community. And going back years ago, you kind of like almost had to hide things and, or doctors weren't, they weren't crazy. Oh, you're gay. And you couldn't really talk to them, but having the medical facilities that embrace LGBTQ plus communities are just, it's so, so important that to move to a place that has that.
And in the case of Grace Cottage Hospital, it was a really extraordinary thing. They have an affiliate organization called Valley Cares, which is a graduated care, assisted living, retirement home that's full spectrum that goes through to nursing home. So it's graduated care from independent living to assisted living to nursing care. And the impetus for this is very much built into the DNA or baked into the DNA of what Grace Cottage is about. And as I looked into where the organization Valley Cares came from, the original property was donated to Grace Cottage for the purposes of creating this type of a facility by a gay couple that were together for 58 years. These were two guys who were both immigrants, one from Bolshevik Russia, one from Germany. They emigrated to New York. They both enrolled in the army where they met abroad. One was a designer, cartographer, artist, and the other was a language specialist, and turns out he was definitely a spy in the OSS. They did their time in the war together, moved back to New York, opened up an interior decoration, fashion, and fine glassware business on Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. His name was Leon Engel, and one was Warren Cronemeyer, and they took their two first names, Leon and Warren, and opened this boutique called Warley, Warren and Leon, and ran this operation there for many, many years. In their later years, they moved to Vermont, opened up an antique shop, and were pillars of the community, and were very, very colorful guys. And at the end of their lives, they deeded the land for the purposes of this becoming this residential facility for elder care. Wow. And so it's kind of baked into the organization. And we uncovered this story. And last year for Pride Month, did a special presentation. Turns out that Leon has a cousin, a 40-something cousin living in Manhattan, who's a gay guy, who's a performance artist and a storyteller. He's gotten two grants for telling stories and redoing genealogical research in the LGBTQ and immigrant space. And he brought the lives of these two guys back to the fore and was able to document, televisual story. We brought together about 40 or 50 people who knew these guys who were still around and did a in-studio presentation that's actually recorded, and it's on our website, and I'll send you a link to it.
Yes, please do.
That recounts the stories of these guys and how this whole thing came to pass, that they ended up in Vermont and then deeded their property to become this extraordinary elder care facility.
That's incredible. That's a great story.
So it's an extraordinary life that we've crafted here. And the beauty of Vermont in many ways is that because it's so small and because it's so progressive, if you have an idea or you want to create an initiative, it's very easy to make it happen just by collaborating with people or just by reaching out and just saying, this is what I want to do. This is what I'd like to make happen. Who can help me with it? And you'll always find helping hands to make these things come to fruit.
Sounds like with the lesser amount of people, there's less red tape to go through as well. So
there's absolutely no question about that. In fact, when I moved my business up here, Mark, many, many years ago in 1996, the week we were moving the business up, and this is a funny story, the phone rings at my office in New Jersey, and it was a very New Jersey office, and my receptionist, I'm dating myself because we didn't have voicemail or an automated attendant, my receptionist, Lucy Moriano, answers the phone, and she buzzes me and says, so Scott, there's somebody named Howard Dean on the phone for you. He says he's the governor of Vermont. Is he full of shit or should I put him through?
That's
and
terrible.
I said, Lucy, he's not full of shit. He's the governor of Vermont. I pick up the phone. I say, Howard. He says, Scott. I say, what can I do for you? He says, I just want to welcome you. I understand you're moving your business up to Vermont, and I want you to know that if there's any questions, if you have any issues, here's my phone number. You call me.
Wow.
And that was my welcome to the state. So it really feels like this is a helping hand kind of place, and a place where there are no strangers. They're only friends that you haven't met yet.
You don't find that anywhere else, I'll tell you that. I mean,
you really don't. It's the best of both worlds. And you can take all of the preconceived notions that you might have about rural areas and throw them out the window, because it's very, very cosmopolitan, very, very worldview in that sense.
Yeah, so progressive. Yeah, I love it. Love it. So do you wish that you had something in Brattleboro that you might have had elsewhere in New York? Or like, can you get a bagel and a schmear?
You can get a bagel and a schmear. You wouldn't do it at a chain type of place like an Einstein bagel.
Right.
You'd go to a place called The Works, and they have really good bagels there. You'd get your schmear on it. And I think growing up as I did and being near the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where I had Barney Greengrass two blocks to one way and Zabar's three blocks to the other way, if I miss something, it's being able to buy really good Jewish style smoked salmon and lox. And so what I've done is looked up how to make gravlox, as it's called. I found the recipe and now I make my own. And so that's kind of been my way of dealing with things. Do I hanker for New York style pizza? No, because I have really good New York style pizza here. I've got somebody in town who's got an excellent restaurant. He's from Westport, Connecticut. We're the home of Fussy Palates. And he makes really good New York style pizza. Do I miss good smoked salmon? Well, I suppose I did, but now I make it on my own.
Now you make it yourself.
It's really quite easy. And I believe I already sent you a link to a recipe for my smoked salmon, my cured salmon.
You certainly did. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. So, okay.
But by and large, I think the things that people say, oh, I miss this or I miss that, I miss Chinatown at 3 a.m, that's all good when you're a 20-something, but you know,
right.
I'm in my mid-60s, and at 3 a.m, I'm deep into my REM sleep. So.
Oh yeah, I'm way before that. So I hear you. All right, so yeah, you don't miss anything. You can get anything that you really want in the area, or make it yourself. Are there any cons of living the life?
I haven't found any, and I say that having lived in a number of places. Part of what I recognize is that the level of stability, the level of comfort, the level of kinship that I have, whether it's my neighbors or whether it's acquaintances or whether it's dear friends or guests who've moved up to the area that have become dear friends, we have a really, really close friendship with everybody. And people aren't judgmental the way they might be in other places. And people are very, very open-minded. Whether it's my neighbors who send their teenage sons here to apply for jobs as housekeeping boys in my all-male bed and breakfast, and I know enough to say, no, that's a little too, you don't shit in your backyard. You don't right. want to be that close to your neighbors. But there's a level of openness, and my neighbors will say to us, how are things at the bed and breakfast? Do they know full well what we're about? We don't fly below the radar. We're very much on the up and up. And I say, business is really great. And they say, we are so happy for you. We're so thrilled for you. And the counterpoint to that is at Frog Meadow, we're on 63 acres, about 8 or 9 acres is open land that's gardens and orchard and pond and meadows. And we have an electric fence around that area to keep the deer out and keep the bear out. And sometimes guests will say, well, is the electric fence there to keep the guests in, or is it to keep the neighbors out? Because they assume that there's an adversarial relationship with the neighbor on the other side, or we have to keep that level of distance. Right. And it's very, very comfortable. The German term for it would be Glück or Gemütlichkeit, which means full of hospitality, full of love, and full of comfort. And so if I have a guest that gets lost and pulls into a neighbor's driveway, and two guys with the New York plates on the car pull up to a neighbor's driveway and they say, we're lost. They say, oh, you're looking for Frog Meadow, Scott and Dave. Because there are sometimes guests will say, well, I wasn't really sure if I could let them know where I was going. They might shoot right. me full of buckshot. And it's like, oh, no, you guys are, oh, Scott and Dave's is just down the road. No worries at all, guys. You're not really lost. You just haven't gone far enough.
Right. Got it. That's great. So where can our audience find you guys on the web, your bed and breakfast?
So we're at frogmeadow.com, FrogMeadow.com. We're in the town of Newfane, Vermont. We've got a website that's packed with everything from video tour of the facility to all kinds of resources to what to do in the area, our curated restaurant list, calendar of events that either we host or that are hosted in the area. And so a lot of folks use it as a resource. We have guests who say, well, I called to book, but it's too late and I don't have, we can't stay with you. And I say, well, by all means, use our website as a resource for restaurants, activities, things to do in the area and stuff like that. And we hope to host you in the future.
Yep. I'll put that in the show notes as well, so our audience could take a look at your place.
And I've left you with a handful of links as well that you can post in there, just what's going on in the way of real estate, some interesting things in terms of the organizations that we support, some press and media stuff about us. We've got a page called Discover Gay Vermont, which lists a lot of things in the Brattleboro area. And in the past, prior to COVID, we hosted a number of men's workshops and retreats, like yoga workshops, massage workshops, tantra workshops, meditation and breath work, because we're very much about finding your center and finding your authentic you. These workshops are a way to have that aha moment and take something forward with you. We've been doing that on a remote or virtual basis, supporting our facilitators, and we hope by the second half of the year to get back into the business of facilitating and hosting these type of workshops on site.
So, Scott, what months are you open?
We open the last weekend in April. We go through New Year's. So pretty much spring through fall through very early winter. And then Dave and I take a break. And this past year, we went to Hawaii for January and February to just kind of recharge our batteries. We were in the Big Island on the Puna Coast near a very gay-friendly eco resort called Kalani, K-A-L-A-N-I. And that, in many ways, served as the inspiration for creating Frog Meadow.
That's great. That's great. Thank you for letting us know and telling us all about it. In wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to the Brattleboro area?
Well, give the area a shot. Come stay with us or come stay in the area. I think you'll find it very refreshing, very different in a very positive way, and something that you might find yourself saying, boy, I wish I could live here. And then you can make it happen. And if you've got questions about real estate in the area, we've got a fellow that we've worked with. It's someone Dave knows for probably 50 years at this point, Tom Dolan. Tom and his husband have been together since high school, so they're high school sweethearts. They used to own a very high-end restaurant in town that they sold about 10 years, and Tom is our realtor of choice. And he's the queer real estate guy who can definitely help you.
Well, this has been great. Thank you. It sounds so enticing. I want to come visit, as I said before.
We look forward to having you, and we look forward to having any and all of the listeners for Where Do Gay Guys Retire come up and check the area out. It's been a really nice time chatting with you, and we really thank you for the opportunity, Mark.
Thanks so much, Scott. I do appreciate it and all your time and effort that you've put into this as well. And this is not the end, so we will be talking soon, okay?
Wonderful. So just remember, discover gay Vermont.
I will discover it. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.